too. Now, Bloomberg reports that the Bank of Baroda is being investigated by the Reserve Bank over money held for companies controlled by the politically connected Gupta family. A person familiar with the matters, the report says, has revealed that the Reserve Bank's probe, which comes after it fined Baroda in June for not doing enough to combat financial crime, was sparked after organization undoing tax abuse outer alleged in court papers that mine rehabilitation funds held for two of the Gupta's family's companies had been mismanaged and used to repay loans. To unpack all of this, we have put a panel together to talk a little bit more in detail about it. So my guest this evening is the Chief Operating Officer at Outer, Mr. Ben Theron. Ben, good evening. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, and good evening to your listeners.
And then, of course, we have the MD of the Banking Association of South Africa, BASA, Mr. Cass Kuvadia. Cass, good evening. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And then we have the Deputy Governor and also the Registrar of Banks, Kuben Naidu. Kuben, thank you so very much. Thanks for making the time.
Good evening, Karima, and welcome to your listeners.
All right, let's start with you, Mr. Theron. You brought the court papers. Now, give us clarity. Are you for a fact aware that these funds are being misused and used for repaying loans? And more importantly, what exactly is the current state of affairs? Has these funds been frozen? Have they been ring-fenced so that they can't be further abused? Just, for listeners who've not been following the story closely, just fill us in.
No, we don't have. We didn't have. When we applied for the court order, we didn't have direct information that speaks to these funds specifically. But we communicated with the banks. And what you said to them is, we are worried about certain transactions that the Bank of Baroda is doing with the Guptas. And the information we had is that the Guptas had 220 million rands worth of property bonded to 998 million. And we were very worried about that. Shortly after that, it could be coincidence, it could be because of the Registrar of Banks spoke to them. But shortly after that, the Bank of Baroda then communicated with the Guptas to say, we don't like you as customers, please close your bank accounts. So I'm being very simplistic. The Guptas then applied to the court to say, please instruct the Bank of Baroda to keep our accounts open because we've got 7,000 employees. Without the bank account, we will not be able to pay them, and therefore it will be a hardship for everybody. During this period, the Guptas were then supposedly sold their business, ANN7 and TNA, as well as the mines. And both of those are shrouded in mystery, and we seriously doubt whether that is true sales taking place. But now, between the sale of a business and the bank account, banks telling them to close the account, You can imagine that they have to come there with some kind of method that says to the bank, please transfer the money, put the money in suitcases. I'm being facetious now. But we are very worried that 1.7 billion rand could go astray. And all we ask the court to do is to at least hold these. We can't talk to the other money, but the trust funds, please hold that in abeyance until we can find a way to deal with it. In the court papers, this is what's interesting. In the court papers, the CEO of Optima Mine, as well as and the responding papers from the bank, speaks to the fact that the Guptas have already started using money to do rehabilitation on one side, and it's in the court papers, and the bank actually indicated how bad customers these people were. So all in all, there were very interesting insights that were gained in that process. Now, just come to the current status. The court instructed the bank to keep the trust fund now, to keep the trust fund in abeyance until the 6th and 7th of December, where a decent hearing will take place about what should happen there to those accounts. The rest of the accounts, the Gupta supplied to the court, and the court has given them extension, I think, until tomorrow, because It was first 7 days and then for another 7 days to do something. So we don't know if there's another extension coming tomorrow. But to all intents and purposes, we believe that the Gupta will have to find a way to transfer the money out of the Bank of Baroda by tomorrow, unless there's a court case. So that, in short, is the history up until now.
Now, Mr. Kuben Naidoo, I know that you are very hesitant and cannot speak about the specifics of a probe, but what are the general guidelines that the central bank sets in instances like this? I'm referring here specifically to the piece that's been written by Bloomberg that is suggesting that the Reserve Bank is in fact probing the Bank of Baroda. Now, without putting you, you know, in a difficult position because of some of the sensitivities, what is the general guidelines of the Reserve Bank, and what would make the bank you know, flag certain transactions and make the bank sit up and worry?
Sure, Karima. Look, there are three specific issues here. The first is anti-money laundering and the enforcement of our Financial Intelligence Center Act. Right, that's the first issue. The second issue is whether any bank, has broken their own internal rules about collateral and about capital in the issuances of loans. And the third issue is the rehabilitation fund, which we regard as public funds and can only be used for specific purposes. Right? So, in general, the Reserve Bank enforces the Financial Intelligence Center Act. We monitor the compliance of the FIC Act with the banks. So we go in there and we do an audit and we see whether the systems of the bank comply with the FIC Act. Right? And we have done this with several banks over the years. We fined many banks for non-compliance with the FIC Act. Right? The second issue is on whether the outer allegations that they have issued loans that are larger than the bonded value. Mm. I don't want to comment specifically on that, only to say that in the routine course of our supervision activities, we take up these sorts of issues with the bank. On the third issue, on the rehabilitation fund, we're watching the court case very closely. We are as concerned as ordinary South Africans are that this is public funds set aside for a specific purpose, and that that money must not be abused, that money must not go astray.
Now, Cass, let me bring you in here. Kuben makes an important point in those three, issues that he highlights. One, of course, is the whether any bank breaks its own internal rules. Now, as a banking association, what would those be, and how would one know that a bank is in fact operating contrary to the framework that it's allowed by the sector and by a specific legislation, whether it is here and globally, given that our banking systems are so globalized? When does one know that a bank is violating those codes? And more importantly, what do banking associations or industry bodies such as yourself, what do you do? What can you do?
Firstly, the industry body is not a regulatory body. So we don't regulate the banks. As Kuben has said, that there are pieces of legislation that banks have to comply with. The Banks Act, the Financial Intelligence Center Act, and now with the new legislation, the Financial Sector Regulatory Act, which will be coming into force very soon. And the under the new legislation, the bank supervisor will actually be responsible for overseeing the implementation of the new piece of legislation, and through various mechanisms of oversight will actually ensure that banks do meet those regulations. If they don't, there are sanctions for that. Similarly, the Financial Intelligence Center Act, as Kuben has said, that last year or so a number of banks were actually fined because the Reserve Bank and the Financial Intelligence Center Office found that their systems and their structures were not robust enough. Not that any money laundering happened, but that the systems and structures were not robust enough. And they were fined as a result of that. So that is the ambit of the regulator, in this case the SARB and the Financial Intelligence Center Office, which reports to Treasury. What the banking association does is that we interact very closely with SARB, and when there are guidance notes from SARB and where there are regulatory advisors from SARB and where we actually interact with FARP to enable a regulatory environment that's appropriate for the banking sector, we ensure that we create the necessary platform for the industry off which the industry actually applied that legislation. So wherever there's a possibility without violating competition regulation to actually create industry platforms that make it smoother for banks to actually apply regulations, we do that. But then it's up to the regulators to oversee and to ensure that the banks comply with that.
Now, Ben, let me bring you in. You spoke earlier about the 36 suspicious and unusual transactions that related to the Gupta's accounts with a combined value of 4.25 billion to the financial intelligence sector center. Now, that, of course, is a massive amount of money. That's a huge, huge red flag. Is there anything else that that we should be concerned about or that ARTA is aware of that could impact the situation, whatever the outcome of tomorrow's court decision?
What we found is that there's a number of transactions internally that speaks to money laundering. And one item that is absolutely sticks out like a sore thumb when people start transferring money is when you transfer money, the same amount of money, through 8 or 9 or 10 bank accounts in one day or even over a period of 2 days. And that's what we found, but we have not communicated that with anybody as yet because we're still trying to confirm that with other evidence. In particular, and I think Cuban spoke about earlier, is that we are very worried about the 1.7 billion rand, particularly for the simple reason is that that's public funds. So if they had to take the money, they sell the mine, and this 1.7 billion rand goes overseas, and the new owners must then be responsible for rehabilitation. Mm. They wouldn't have the infrastructure to do that, which would then revert back to South Africans taking the responsibility for that. And if you look at the amount of money that has flown out of this country already, it is absolutely scary to think that 1.7 to 2 billion rand will then have to be found somewhere, which we don't have under this current economic conditions, to then go and rehabilitate the mine. All in all, we are just worried about the way the Guptas and state institutions are dealing with each other, and money is disappearing hand over fist.
Mm-hmm. Now, Kupen, the concern, of course, becomes even more acute if some of these mines are sold off. And we saw that in the Gupta set of companies, a lot of companies are being sold off. And one, of course, was the mines to some, I think, Swiss, if I'm not mistaken, based company. What happens in a case where these funds could potentially be misused? Does the Reserve Bank have the authority to freeze these funds and to freeze the sale of the mines and the sell-off and the asset dump? I can't seem to think of another way to describe it, of some of these Gupta assets.
Hi, Karima. Karima, we don't have the power to stop the sale of a mine. The Minister of Mineral Resources has that power. What we can do is we can stop money from entering or leaving the country if we suspect that it violates our law, our exchange control, or if it is money laundering. So we do have the power to freeze accounts. We do have the power to freeze money. We publish these regularly in the Government Gazette. And if we feel that money is leaving the country illegally, illicitly, we certainly have some measures to act.
All right, we're going to take a short break, gentlemen. Do stay on the line. It's coming up for 10 to 9. We are in conversation with the Chief Operating Officer at ARTA, Mr. Ben Taron, the MD of the Banking Association of South Africa, Mr. Cass Kuvadia, and the Deputy Governor and Registrar of Banks at the South African Reserve Bank, Mr. Kuben Naidu. We are talking, of course, of the issue around the Bank of Baroda, whether there's an internal or rather whether there's a Saab probe into it. Without going into some of the specificities, we're looking at the broad categories, and of course all of this coming about as a consequence of ARTA bringing that case. And then of course there is the court decision we are all awaiting tomorrow. It's coming up for it is in fact 10 to 9. This is the Karima Brown Show. You're listening to 702. When we come back, we continue our conversation. My guest this evening, Ben Taron from OUTA, Mr. Kaskuvadia of the Banking Association, and of course the Deputy Governor and Registrar of Banks at the South African Reserve Bank, Kuben Naidoo. Kuben, let me start with you. The fact that OUTA says that they found that there could be as many as 8 different banks being used to do what he alleges to be money laundering. That is one of the things that you need to, that you flag and that you look at. And I know that you're not able to speak specifically about this probe, but in the event that this is the case, what happens, let's say hypothetically, a bank is guilty of being involved in that with a particular client. What exactly does the Reserve Bank do in an instance like that? What happens? Take our listeners through it.
Sure. Karima, we monitor the compliance of the banks with our anti-money laundering laws. We're not an investigative body. The FIC is. If we come across evidence that a bank is engaging in money laundering, we pass that information over to the Financial Intelligence Center or the National Prosecuting Authority or the Specialized Crime Unit of the police. And we have done that numerous times. Whether those are prosecuted in some ways is not up to us. It's up to the police and the NPA to prosecute. If a bank has breached the compliance rules, we can fine them. And we have fined several banks over the years. Our job is to ensure that they have the systems to comply with anti-money laundering.
Now, let's look at the public funds. If it is found that public funds are being used in ways that it shouldn't, what exactly are you then able to do over and above just freezing it? Is that all you do? What happens to, let's say, a criminal leg of that investigation? Is that something that you have to pass over, let's say, to the Hawks or to the NPA?
Yes, Karima, we pass that over to the Hawks and the NPA. And, you know, it's a public record, and we've said it in Parliament, that we have handed over many cases to the NPA and the Hawks, and we're actually disappointed that very few of them get investigated and lead to a trial and to convictions.
Now, that is actually the issue that I wanted to raise. Of course, many listeners often saying that, what is the point of handing some of these cases over? Our institutions that need to be doing these investigations, bring the charges, prosecute, are in fact captured. Cass, for someone such as yourself who operates in an association of banks or the banking association, what is your sense of the capacity of these institutions or their willingness to act? And in light of what some would argue are the very tardy responses, what is that doing for business confidence and for, let's say, you know, the financial sector at large? Cass, are you there?
Yeah, I'm there. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. The current sort of accounts, the whole Gupta-related stuff and so on, have received a lot of publicity. But banks close accounts quite often. It's just that it doesn't necessarily become public. So banks are actually quite good, and they have the systems in place. And remember that our banks are pretty sophisticated. Until recently, they were the second most sound banking system in the world, until the recent World Competitive Report. So they're actually quite good at identifying suspicious activity and referring them to the Financial Intelligence Center office. It's just that those things don't go public. It's part of the business to actually do that and part of the business to actually be on top of these issues. In these present accounts and the current circumstances, it's just that because there's been relationships with state capture and so on, it's gone public, and banks have indicated publicly that they've closed these accounts. But it would be a mistake to think that it's only this time that the banks have acted against suspicious activity. They do that all the time. It just doesn't go public. So I don't think I would differ to say that the response has been a tardy one. I think the banks investigated. They looked at these accounts. They took into account all the noise around these accounts, and they investigated them. They found suspicious activity, and they acted according to the law.
All right.
And that's what they did.
Ben, I'm going to give you the last word, just quickly, 30 seconds. What is the next move for Outer, specifically on some of the issues that you are still investigating, that you need more evidence around in terms of the potential money laundering?
We need to communicate with the Registrar of Banks, and we need to communicate with the FIC. One of the things that we are concerned about, and maybe Cass could respond to that, is that we find that people are almost maliciously following the law and reporting into the FIC, etc. And what happens is, because there's a capacity problem across Africa in the government institutions specifically, the FIC can't get to these things. So when the Reserve Bank go and investigate and knock on the door, they show these documents that says, but we have reported. And we believe there's some improvement that need to be, there's some improvement required to, in fact, achieve optimization in this process.
Well, that's where we have to leave it, gentlemen.